Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Dear Joe King podcast with SJ and Eva B. We are a three-way Zoom podcast from London, Dublin and Madrid. And thanks for listening. I have become a fake tan kind of addict. Can you see my arms there?
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've just gotten in the habit of doing it at night very quickly with the glove and the mousse and into bed. Black pajamas, a vestment, very good. And then the shower in the morning and it comes off and you're fresh and yeah. You're brown. It's yeah. Actually magical.
Yeah.
Well, I told you about my Debs, didn't I? I went to my Debs with my friend Dee.
I put
on a fake tan bottle, I'll tell you now, and the two of us put the fake tan. And of course, it was a tan that would develop over time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were so clueless. We're talking 1985 now. That we lashed it on, and sure, there wasn't any sign of any colour, and we just kept going. We put the entire bottle on, and we got blacker and blacker and blacker as the night went on. And by the
two D's,
honestly, I was the spit of Halle Berry. I was like,
well, Jesus, I mean, I'd love to be the spit of Halle Berry,
yeah. Honestly. And the lads' shirts that were gross, they were covered in the tan.
Oh,
yeah, and I was in a white dress, like it was pure filth.
I wore a white dress for the Debs. I don't think I've ever shared my Deb story with the two of you.
There's no time like the present podcast.
Oh, you're sharing it with a lot more than us two now. Go on.
Well, I know.
So
go on.
The Debs, you know, and you're at the excitement and it just takes up so much mental space and you're looking at the dresses and you're drawing the dresses and you should be listening to what the teacher's saying and the excitement and who we're going to bring. And in the end, I fancy this guy and I decided that he was the one I was going to bring to the Debs. And we invited him over to the house, obviously, for the photos beforehand. My aunt and my cousins came down. It was a big event in our family, right? But the Debs coincided with my father's departure to England. And he was going to be moving to England for work for some time until my mother would then join him.
Farewell and a good luck to you on a combined occasions.
But the tensions, which I didn't quite understand the way in which my mother must have been feeling, you know, because it was all about the Debs, but also dad was leaving and my sister, younger sister, was going to be going to boarding school soon after that. So it must have been a very stressful time.
And sorry to interrupt, but was your dad going to be going for a long time?
He was, but my mother was going to join him, you see. He was the marketing director for Kerry Group and he was going off to set up shop essentially over in England. So it was all of this was kind of bubbling under the surface. Your man arrives to the door and I put my coat on right away. It was just kind of let's just go. And I was a bit nervous and everyone's a bit nervous. So we never took any photos in the living room, which is the standard where the guy and the girl, they stand and off we went to the Debs. Had a great night, fantastic night. Got the shift and everything, you know, myself and himself, a lovely
very
time.
Successful
very successful
story
Debs.
So far.
All very successful. And then the next day I noted that my mother was very upset because she hadn't taken any photos. And I said, don't be worried. It's Grant. I took loads of photos last night. And so went off, got the disposable camera or whatever camera I had, went down to the chemist, got the photos developed. And sure, they were all like Deb's photos, drunken photos, you know, just nothing that you could hold in your hand and go
hang on the wall,
hang on the wall. Nothing like that. It was just all of us kind of doing bad selfies back in the early 90s. And so my mother was... This is not great. And I said, it's fine, Mom, don't worry about it. But you see, my mother really wanted a keepsake of the Debs, you know. So a couple of days later, I came home from school, and on my bed was my Debs dress. And I said, what's this doing here? And she said, okay, now don't be mad, but Brian is going to come over.
The lad? Oh, Jesus, she called him herself. Oh, Jesus, carry on.
She rehired the tux.
And Brian.
Brian came over to the house for a photo session.
She wanted a reenactment.
She wanted a reenactment. And not only that, but Brian's mother was only delighted with the thought of that, because she'd gotten in touch with the mother. And she said, oh, can we get in on that? So we traipsed into the car, went up to his house, where we had another photo session up in his part two. And like, when he arrived to the door, the two of us staring at each other, I looked at him and I went, I'm so sorry. And he went, it's fine. I'm so sorry. I didn't know what to say. I was 16 years of age. I'm never going to get over this.
At 16, that is huge. I'm just imagining if I did that to my daughter, she would kill me. I mean, I wouldn't even dream of it. Well, that's the difference in the times between then and now, because I, as a mother, wouldn't dare cross the line and do something like that. Yeah, but back then. Yeah. They ruled the roost. Maybe it was better that way. I don't know.
Anyway, listen, I took that into the classroom the next day. And it was like I was burdened with this big secret that I didn't want to share with anyone, because it was just so mortifying. But in the end, actually, it just proved to be kind of a laugh. And then we got the photos back and we were kind of looking at them, but it just awesome.
Wasn't the same.
It wasn't the same.
Well, the only thing I'd say as a positive, no, I'd say it was desperate, the reenactment. Oh, Lord. But I have no photos except a couple of pictures that were taken in Dee's house. Very grainy. You can't really see them. I'm black. There's no point in pretending. I was nothing but black. So I'm kind of sorry I don't have a better picture of it, because really, I'm serious. And I would frame it and put it up on the wall. It would make everyone laugh.
It's one of those things that I couldn't really talk about it for a long time. It was too stressful.
You were too embarrassed.
My poor mother, like, kind of think about her. She must have been stood up to Hido, you know, for two teenagers. Like, can you imagine, Holly?
Oh, it wouldn't happen. Like, it just wouldn't happen.
Well, tell me this, because this brings me nicely now into teenagers, talking about teenagers and Dee in particular. Well, this is aimed at both of you, right? Because I thought that I was, quite like down with the teenagers. I got friends who have teenagers, Dee yourself, but I don't see your kids obviously very regularly, but Alison's kids are sort of in the teenage years. And I have other Paul Hickey's kids, of course, as well.
Yeah.
And recently, when I met them all recently, and thought, I'm not that down with the youth. I either didn't know the music that they're on about. Yeah. I didn't. TikTok is still a complete fucking. I have no idea what the fuck is TikTok. I mean, I know that people make videos, but I have no idea why or how or when you should do it. So then, I'm going to put this to you, right? I got a little. If I said this sentence to you, can you tell me what this means, right?
Oh, now, I love this.
Listen, it's wonderful. Listen,
okay. I'm excited.
Okay. Now, this, bear in mind, this is London slang, okay? So it'll be different probably, but some of it might be similar. But the point being is that wherever you're from, be you living in Madrid or Dublin or London, there is a vocabulary that is completely beyond us. That is like incomprehensible. So here's the sentence I put together, right? Come to my end for a motive. You might meet some leng blokes or peng girls. It's going to be well lit, that's no cap. Just don't be jarring or start beef with any clapped neeks, because you might get chef for flexing.
Okay, go the first bit again. Now.
Oh, that was a lot.
Let's go through again. Come to my end for a motive.
Come over to my gaff for some reason or other.
A motive might be more to a motive than
for some reason or other.
Drugs. Would there be drugs or drink involved in
that? No. Come to my neck of the woods, my neighborhood.
Yes, my
a motive. Now, a motive is
Nothing to do with the murder anyway.
No, it's a party of between, this is quite specific, 15 and 30 people.
Oh, that's amazing.
Anything smaller than that is a gathering. And a party has to be 50 plus. So a motive is anything between the 15 and 45.
Okay.
So
wow. Right? That's news.
Okay. You might meet some Lang blokes.
Langers?
Now meat. What do you think? You think meat is just meat? Meat isn't just meat. Meat is kiss.
Oh, kiss.
Meat is kiss.
Oh, you might get the shift.
You might get the shift. Some Lang blokes. Lang is good looking.
Right.
Ooh. Or Peng girls. Peng is pretty.
Wow.
It's going to be well lit. We're not talking about lighting.
We're going...
Well lit. It's going to be
great crack.
Cool. Well lit, well cool. Supplied.
Cool. Oh, cool. Cool.
Okay.
Well, that's lit. No cap.
That's no shit.
No,
that's no lie.
No idea.
Just don't be jarring.
Don't be taking jarring. Your time. Like, come on now.
Don't be annoying.
Oh, don't be annoying.
Jarring, okay.
Or start any beef. Or start beef with any clapped neeks.
Don't be starting any fights. That's don't be starting any fights. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beef is fights. Clapped neeks.
People from Clapton.
Clapped is ugly. Neeks are geeks. Right? Because you might get chefed. Chefed is
stabbed up.
Not knived.
Stabbed.
Yeah.
Perplexing.
The knives.
Well, it used to be shanking. I know shanking. In prisons, you hear the shanking in prisons. Chefed is knifed.
Chefed for Nicks.
Perplexing. Wow. Flexing.
Flexing.
Are you telling me that the teenagers you know are speaking like this?
I put this sentence together with all the new vocabulary I learned over the last week.
Amazing.
And flexing is showing off.
Yeah, flexing your muscles. So flexing.
Like flexing your muscles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. I get that one. That's the only one.
I mean, that's a different language.
Oh, that's a different language.
And this is specific to London. It'd be interesting now if you asked Holly to give you some of the words that have been used for things like, you know, good looking.
She definitely has words. I don't know them. I don't think motive is in there or anything. I've never heard of those, but I'll ask.
Yeah.
But in relation to trying to stay cool and stay with it, like, I have no interest. I wouldn't go there. I actually think it's a bit embarrassing to try to stay cool and keep up with teenagers. That's a bit more.
Well, that's how I just discovered it.
Like,
I embarrass myself.
Yeah.
You're a grown up. You're not a teenager. Yeah. The teenagers are embarrassed by you. So just
100%. I've learned fairly lively not to try to hang with them, not to try to. If the friends come over, I scarp. I'm afraid of them. I'm like, oh, well, hi, girls. I'm gone. 5 minutes of chat. 5 minutes of chat. I'm very fond of them all. I'll have a bit of chat. And then you kind of know they'd love you to go.
Yeah. See, I think myself and Ross made the mistake of trying to be cool. Oh, yeah, we'll hang out there. Yeah. And then going, oh, no.
Yeah, no, you learn.
They're embarrassed. Fast. Everybody's embarrassed. No.
This is
backwards.
I wasn't. I mean, here's the thing. I wasn't cool when I was a teenager. What are the chances I'm going to be cool with them now?
And you know what we did this morning? It was such a middle-aged moment for a married couple.
Welcome to my world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was hilarious. He said, I have to go to the doctor because, you know, he's so sexy. And I said, oh, okay, I'll see you later. And then he said, no, I'll be back quickly. I only, you know, it's a blood test. And I went, oh, I need a blood test too. And he said, do you have a Volante, like a prescription to get one? I went, yeah, I got it from the gynecologist the other day. And I said, oh, that's so cool. We can go both have blood tests together and then we can go for breakfast.
Gosh.
Right? So off we went. So he dropped Lewis to school. He comes back and I have my thing. And then we're like, oh, this is great. We're like a little breakfast date. Off we went to the clinic. There was a lovely guy. He was so nice. He was so pleasant. His name was Matteo. And he was like, ¿de dónde eres? I said, Irlanda. Oh, yo conocido que eres irlandesa con tu piel tan bonita. And I was like, where are you?
Just keep on talking.
I love when she breaks into Spanish.
It's like the erotic. I'm like a bit excited sitting here.
It was the least painful blood test I'd ever had.
Do the guy again. Do the guy again.
Do the guy again. Do the rest of the podcast as the guy.
And he was very camp. That's super what I was camp. Enjoying.
Super camp, right? And he had these tattoos down his neck, and I could see when he leaned over me, he had this fabulous tattoo down his chest. So we were both kind of reacting from each other. And I said, and I knew he wasn't Spanish, but you don't want to assume either. I said, tú no eres de España, no? No, cariño, no. Yo soy de Colombia. Oh, Colombia. He's like, yo quiero ir a Irlanda. ¿De dónde eres en Irlanda? ¿De dónde eres? I said, Kerry, en el sudoeste, lo más bonito, como tú. Y as he did that, he put the thing in and I didn't feel a thing. And I was like, me encanta tus tatuajes, pero gracias. ¿Y cuántos años has estado aquí? Siete. Oh, and then I told him we were leaving, and he was like, de Madrid, pero sí, es mucho edad. No, yo, no.
I mean, I can't understand a word, but I'm understanding everything.
Absolutely adore it. And I feel like I'm listening to a Spanish soap opera.
It's wonderful.
Oh, God, it's brilliant.
I'm a bit in love with him.
Oh, he was fabulous.
And you, when you do that voice.
And
he was just gorgeous. He was so nice. And then I went out, and then I came out, and Ellie was like, and I was like, his name is Mateo. He's fabulous. And then Ellie did, and then I could hear, Susi, oh, de donde eres? And we just had our bloods taken, and not mine were taken to check my hormone levels for menopause, and his were, you know, for, so it was the most middle-aged we've probably ever had. I said,
this woman here, Dee, had her veins done on her birthday.
I'm all over this blood levels, and you know, I'm in that thick of all.
Welcome to our lives.
Gosh. There was I don't know if either, you probably didn't see it now, you're Madrid based, but I wonder, did you, Eva? Because Davina McCall did this program about the menopause. It was actually phenomenal. It's on Channel 4. You can probably get it on the players. Really worth watching.
This is
what an eye opener. But God almighty, do you know what I was really taken aback by? That this is suddenly like, that menopause is a thing that needs to be have the taboo taken off it. Like, and I'm kind of going, are we still at this stage where even the word makes people go, you know, it makes me feel physically. But
my mother, when we were chatting a couple of weeks ago, right after that, she said, oh, they're all talking about the menopause on Joe Duffy. And Anne-Marie, my oldest sister, is listening to it as well. And she said, I just think it's wonderful that people are talking about it, because, you know, my generation, we didn't have the menopause. And she said it in a really kind of a sarcastic tone, which I was very happy to hear, because it was the first time she'd ever really discussed the fact that it just wasn't spoken about. And she said, it's amazing and it's wonderful that people are finally able to talk about it. She said, your father he didn't even know what it was. It was never discussed. Never discussed. And it's like, oh my God. Because
how has it come to that? How did that actually happen? Do you know what I mean? But like, so much wasn't discussed. And it's...
But is that Ireland? Is that our country responsible for that?
No,
is that
just honest with you.
Generational across the board, most countries. Yeah. So that's a massive stigma to shake, isn't it?
It is.
It needs an overhaul. Yeah.
Oh, it does. And fair play to Davina McCall, because it's exactly what it needs. That programme, she had a lot of well-known faces, but also an awful lot of just regular human beings, citizens, wonderful people talking about. And obviously some people struggle more than others. It's not a fair, it's not a level playing field, menopause. So there's a lot of luck involved here. And a lot of that will be how your mother got on.
Yeah.
But it was a real eye-opener. What shocked me was only 1 in 10 women are on HRT. Now, I was very shocked by that. And a lot of the reason for that was this study that came out more than 20 years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a huge fright. It was associated with breast cancer. HRT became associated with breast cancer. And overnight, 50% of the women who were on HRT came off it. Overnight, virtually. This doctor who delivered this paper did so much damage to women, and because it has since been disproved completely, the link to breast cancer, you're talking 4 women in 1,000 it might affect. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, what they said was never... those four women were very likely to get breast cancer anyway. Yes. And all these women came off the HRT and it became a thing of, oh, no, a cancer association. And like, it's just the worst thing imaginable.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, HRT now is vastly improved as well as to what it used to be.
But I just felt it was so sad that they were going through all of the things that they were going through and parenting and raising children and with no knowledge, no information, no empathy, no nothing. It was just, you had to just get on with it. And the changes that and the effects that has on your day to day, just shocking.
Oh, but you listen, I mean, there's been horror stories out there, but still there's an awful long way to go. Do you know that in this program, it was revealed that 2/3 of the women who went to their doctor with menopause symptoms were prescribed antidepressants. And isn't that shocking? Because so the
doctors weren't even recognizing it.
No. And not only that, but they have never studied menopause as a module when they study medicine. Oh, it's not Jesus. Something you have to study as a doctor. Oh. So you're going to see a person who knows as much about it as you Nothing. Do, essentially, unless you're going. So that's why now there are lots of clinics that are for women that are just, you know, female. I go to one here, but they were showing on the map of England how there are very few in the north and very few, like, so some people are just dependent on their GP, and the GP are putting loads of women on antidepressants. The antidepressant, by the way, doesn't cure those symptoms.
No.
It's not the same thing. Oh, it was such an eye-opener. It was amazing.
That's what happens a huge amount, not exactly the same, but on a similar vein, when women who have recently given birth, postpartum blues and postpartum depression, that they're put on antidepressants, which of course there are cases where that is correct and, you know, that they have been rightly prescribed. But a lot of the time, what they're experiencing is because of the blood loss that happens through labor, that amount of blood loss, your iron levels dip and give the same symptoms as depression. When actually, this is where the doctors should be realizing what's going on, is that what they just need is an iron supplement, and the iron supplement will alleviate all those feelings of postpartum depression within weeks. It's as simple as that, and an antidepressant is needed. Obviously, this is all case dependent, but another thing that's overlooked by the professionals.
Yeah. Mother of divine God, it's women have not been well served are still not well served, but it's improved dramatically. But the lack of knowledge around all of this, the lack of discourse, I just don't know how it's happened. I should explain, though, to the people who are listening, that which I find very funny is that you and Ellie are having hundreds of tests and every part of your anatomy checked before you leave Spain, because it's so much cheaper to go to the doctor there. And that's why you're being thoroughly checked from head to toe.
Head to toe. There's
and you're dead right.
Yeah. Not a bit of my body.
Orifice has not been looked at.
You're dead right, because honestly, I think there's a backlog here because of Corona as well. Getting any appointments for anything is just all very slow. So you're dead right. Yeah.
I'm trying to. I don't think I'll be able to have the mammogram before I go, because there's kind of a backlog here as well. But anyway, look, it was.
Get that very quickly.
Listen, they're looking great. That's any.
She's after flashing us there. And they looked absolutely
fine. For our listeners, SJ, because it's so hot in Madrid, is just sitting in her bra, which we got a full view, and you get the thumbs up from this mammogram.
Oh,
mi cariño. Oh, qué bonita. Las guapas titties. Some of that was actual words.
Very good, Eva.
Very good.
I made something up, a bit of gibberish. Oh, I'm the fifth. It just means nothing.
It probably does in some city somewhere. That's like the London slang. It means something somewhere.
I do wish I could speak another language.
I
don't speak another language. Do you, Eva?
No. I have like very basic Spanish. Very, very basic. And as I get older, I'm forgetting more and more each day. So that was it. You have pretty tits. That's all I know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, well, I tell you about this thing. I'm reading a book, by the way, that I think both of you will love. I'm going to hold it up to you. It's called Difficult Women by Helen Lewis, A History of Feminism in 11 Fights. Now, it's not as heavy. It's not heavy like it sounds like it is, but it's actually just a really brilliant book. And I know you'd love it. But there was one part of it I was reading, haven't gotten to the end yet. It was about sport, and it was about football and women's football in particular, which I've kind of started enjoying. And I'm watching the Irish women's football. They're doing brilliantly, as are the women's rugby team, as are the women's hockey here doing. They're just doing incredible things. But it was only when I was reading the book that I suddenly thought, my God, we've been watching men playing sport all our lives. And I never really questioned it. Like when I was younger and we were watching football and watching even golf, it's just been wall-to-wall men playing sport for as long as I can remember. And
rugby,
the only time you saw women doing sport was individual sport like tennis or gymnastics, like you were a fan of, SJ. And I just always assumed that this was just, you know, it was as the times that were in it, women weren't allowed to play football. But what I didn't realize until I read this book was that at a certain time, women's football was big in the UK, and it was because of the war. So after like the First World War, the munitions factories were, they didn't have the staff for them because all of the men were either were gone to war or killed. There was so much loss of young men's lives that they didn't have any much work in the munitions factories. So the women went to work for the first time, and this was the reason. And when they came to their break times, they did what the men did, and they started playing football. And some of them were very, very good at it. And at a certain point in history, they became quite well known, like during the war, and the teams sort of gathered a bit of momentum. And there was once a couple of star players, one called this woman called Lily Parr, who was 6 foot tall when she was only 14 years old, and apparently a phenomenal footballer, and became quite famous in France thanks to the Pathé newsreels. And at a certain point in England, they played to 50,000 capacity stadiums, the football. And then when the men came back from the war, the FA stopped it all. They banned them and they stopped it all. Because it was so demoralizing to the men to see that the women had sort of taken over and were popular and were doing really, really well and people loved watching them. And they stopped and they banned them.
Threatened by it.
And the story in this book is of these particular women and this team, and would absolutely break your heart because it's a glimpse of what football could have been for women if it had been funded for all of those years, and instead they quashed it.
Such an incredible story, though.
I mean, you're going to devour that book. You're both going to absolutely love it. But I never knew that. I never knew that football had been a thing after the war in England.
And itself back, isn't it? I mean, I don't watch really sport at all. But am I right in saying that women's football now is quite strong? Like that,
it's growing massively. Yeah, and it is. And we have a wonderful football team. And a wonderful rugby team. They're both doing really well. But geez, my God, we don't see enough of them on the telly. It's like, come on, lads, would you give them all a bit more airtime? Yeah. I'd never watched hockey on the telly in my life until a year ago when the Irish women's hockey got to the final of like the World Cup. They were just unbelievable. And it was brilliant to watch. You don't even have to be a fan of hockey. They were just phenomenal to watch. But how did it happen? Like, I know how it happened. We all know historically that, you know, the patriarchy was the thing that, you know, led the, everything, the world, the country. But how did they get away with it for so long? How did they keep us down for so long?
But the thing is that they're still keeping women down in little ways. Like, little example was Simone Biles, right? When she achieved, she keeps achieving. She's the
world's
best gymnast, women's gymnast. Okay. She's just extraordinary. She's an American. And she won, you know, so many gold medals in the last Olympics. And the question was whether or not she's going to come out of retirement for the next one. And yes, she is. So there was the big, the American showcase a couple of weeks ago. And she achieved something that, which she has done before, which no other woman gymnast has, which is a, you know, it probably won't mean anything to most, but it's a double Yurchenko pike on a vault, which is
whatever it is, it's very difficult,
really difficult and dangerous, but she's so good, she keeps taking it to the next level. And what was discussed was that she didn't get the marks that she should have got because the judges believed it was too difficult for a woman gymnast to do. And yet when the men achieve things that no other men gymnasts have achieved before, they changed the point system. So for the women gymnasts, it's a different. It's like, oh no, that's too dangerous. No other women should be doing that.
But when are we talking about? When did this?
This was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, right. Stop.
But like, this has always been the case. You know, like, I mean, so women, you know, women and men are always pushing themselves, right? But but when it comes to the women competitors, even the scoring systems are made a little bit more difficult because they're saying this is too difficult and it's dangerous for other gymnasts who perhaps will want to try that and they won't be able to because they're not as good as you. So it's, they have to change the scoring
system. The shackles are still there.
Because, I mean, that was the whole thing with, like, when Nadia Comaneci, we were obsessed with gymnastics in our house, myself and my sister, and she was the first gymnast to ever achieve a perfect 10 in an Olympics.
Gives me little shivers. I love hearing that.
Oh, it was amazing.
Perfect 10. And it's been my dream 10. All my life. Yeah.
But there was a TV movie called Nadia, and we watched that movie to death. We knew it off by heart. We used to go to bed at night, my sister and I, and we would just recount the whole film, word for word.
Were you a gymnast, Esther?
I was.
Yeah. Now, I was because you look like a gymnast.
I was a gymnast at a Kerry County Community Games level, right? Like,
that's so.
Yeah, it's
a level.
It was a level. It was a very basic level, right? Really, very basic level. But watching this film and the excitement, because when she achieved that perfect 10, the scoreboard hadn't progressed enough because no one had ever done that before. So when she got the perfect 10, it came up as 1-0-0, and everyone in the auditorium were like, only one. She only got one. And then they made the announcement, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in the history of the Olympic Games, a perfect 10. And everyone was like, oh my god. And then they had to change the scoring system from here on in so that other people could get a 10. And that's what's happening now as well, like, and it's so exciting, but it's also a reflection on how women can also break boundaries and change scoreboards, and that should be celebrated. Like, yeah,
absolutely. Of course it should.
Encouraged. Of course it should. Yeah. And I say it to anyone who's listening, who's in a position of being a broadcaster. Please, can we see more team sport, more female team sport on the telly? That's a brilliant story. I never heard that about the scoreboard.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Dee, what's the name of that book again? Will you?
It's called Difficult Women, A History of Feminism in 11 Fights by Helen Lewis, who's a wonderful journalist.
Great.
You'll love it. You'll really enjoy it. You really will enjoy it.
Did either of you play any sports when you were younger?
I played a bit of hockey at school, but I wasn't very good at it. And then I joined a running club when I was, I think, about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11. And I was pretty good at that. I competed a lot. I did a lot of cross country. Yeah, and I did sprints. And I did hurdles, but I wasn't very good at hurdles. I got very short legs, you see.
And then I discovered horses, and I then sort of had to make a choice between the running and the horses. And I went down the horsey route for a while. Right. And I did a bit.
Interesting that you had to make a choice. Most kids now just do everything.
I know, yeah.
They're burnt out.
Yeah, I think it's because my parents, like every weekend for 2 years, they were bringing me to, you know, in dreadful weather, cross country, you know, races and, you know, pissed in the rain and, you know,
yeah,
on a Saturday morning. And so I think that they actually, bless them, I think they enjoyed it to a point. But then when I decided I just wanted to do horse riding once a week, they're like, fine. Yeah, okay. You can do that.
Great. Let's narrow it down.
Yeah.
What about you?
Me, sport. Well, I was an Irish dancer as a child, so that was my childhood. I mean, it really was. I was at a fesh in some part of the country every week. I was quite good. I was quite good. I mean, I went to the World Championships.
Wow, very good.
Were you also not? You? Yes, you were an Irish dancer.
I was an Irish dancer.
You had this chat.
Yeah. I was a Irish dancer. I didn't ever made it to the world though, so you must have been very good now. Then. But like you did, like my mother.
I had very few, very few photos. Very few. Somebody actually sent me one recently and I was like, oh my God, there I am with the little dress, the World Championships dress. In order to dance in the World Championships, you have to be placed in either first, second or third place in a province. Jeez, thanks be to God, the words came to me. Ulster, Munster, Leinster, College. So I came third in Ulster. Channeling you, Eva, I did a dance called the Orange Rogue.
Oh!
Were you wearing a bowler hat?
I was in a bowler hat, and that was the bowler hat that did it. I did a little sash on me at the end. That was my sport when I was and then in secondary school I wasn't great at anything. I was on the tennis team. We all played tennis in our house. Yeah,
I replay tennis.
Think you're quite posh if you're into tennis. If you're a tennis player, would you have been a posh child? Maybe.
Definitely don't think so.
For the sake of your parents who might be listening, just say yes.
Oh, we were very posh, girl. We were very posh. Let me tell you, I have a funny horse story, Eva. I love horses, think they're gorgeous animals. And for years, I just assumed that I would be able to ride a horse. I mean, to the point where I imagined that I could do it so well, like how hard could it be, that I put it down as one of my special skills.
As an actress. Well, now we've all done that.
You're not alone.
We've all got horse riding on the scene. So you can horse ride in Spanish if they want.
This is it. So I had horse riding down as the special skill.
The one you're very good at, yeah.
The period costume. I'm like, I sure, listen, I'll get an old.
No, every actor in the world has horse riding down as a skill.
Yeah. So then cut
none
to.
None of us can do it.
Cut
apart
to.
From me.
Not just that. Not only could not do it, cut to. A couple of years later, I'm in Dublin and a friend of mine lives down in Blessington, and they have a horse farm, and she invited me down for the weekend. This is great, fantastic. Up I went on a horse for the first time, and it was an old horse who wasn't going to trot too long. Next thing I know, I'm coming to in the bath. Because I am so allergic to horses that I almost died.
Oh, wow.
Yes, wow. And her mother was a nurse and I thankfully had an antihistamine strong enough to fling into me. And I am so allergic to horses that it was...
Oh, my God.
And
there's
so
your special skill.
Took it right off the CV. And then I got the job working on War Horse. And I thought, Jesus, I better nip this in the bud. So I paid a lot of money to go to an allergist just to say, so listen, here's the deal. I've got a job and I really need it. But it's called War Horse and I'm very allergic to horses. Can you sort of...
Of all the games.
So you just had to keep away from the set and away from the horse.
No, so basically he did the test, you know, they put the little needles on you and I was allergic to all kinds of things, it turned out, you know, and it all kind of, I was very asthmatic when I was younger, and so it all kind of started to become very clear that there was a lot of environmental things, especially living in Kerry, that could have brought that on. And I don't have any asthma anymore. And so when we got, he basically gave me some very strong antihistamines to bring on this job. And he just said, you can be around them but just don't go anywhere near them.
What are the skills do you have? What are the classic skills that we put down as actors? I can't really remember. Swimming, I think, and horse riding.
Fencing was always
fencing. On. Fencing. Everyone said yes. Never asked to fence. I was never asked, were you? To swim, horse ride, or fence, but it was all there.
Driving is all
driving.
Special skill.
Yeah. And I have many embarrassing on-set driving experiences because I didn't learn to drive until about 8 years ago. So I was very late to the game with it. So I spent 15 years on jobs. Well, maybe 10 of those years were years where I could get roles that would involve driving. And yeah,
I think if you move to a big city when you're in, like in your 20s, you don't learn to drive. You won't learn London or New York.
Exactly. And having this really embarrassing setup, you know, where crew would like push the car into shot, you know, and you'd sit there and behind the wheel going, oh, here I am driving into shot. And there's like three men behind the car.
And I remember, mortifying.
Really, really embarrassing. And I remember a director coming up to me at one point just saying, and I must have been like, it might have been late 30s, being pushed into shot. And he looked at me and he just went, would you just learn to drive? Just sort it out.
And have you?
Have you?
Yeah. She has, yeah. She does.
Not cool. Yeah. So I did lie about
it. It's a horrible feeling. But even when you can drive, driving on camera is a pressure anyway.
Oh my God.
It's just absolutely. Like, oh Jesus, I have to hit a mark now. The car has to hit a...
Yeah. Oh, I remember my first TV job was Glen Rowe and I couldn't drive, but my character had a car. And not just any old car, a Citroën Diane. Do you remember Citroën Diane's?
I don't.
Very old.
I wouldn't be a car person.
Think of car now. They have the gear stick is like up on the dashboard.
Oh, yes.
And it's at an angle. And it's a whole like,
oh yes, ooh, I know exactly.
Driver. It's a whole, you know, knack to it. Yeah. And this was my car. And I had to drive this around the place. And then I had to drive a tractor. And drive. And they had me like the most difficult vehicles that you could imagine. I was like winging it.
I just picture you're trying to get up on the tractor.
Come here to me. Was this like one of your first jobs?
Lines. Then having to act. I'm like, oh Jesus, I can't get a thing into gear. Oh, stalling and breaking.
No, I feel sick. I feel sick because I've had that stress, and it's just
and the
horrible.
Time wasting. You can see all the crew and the director going, looking at their watches, going, oh Jesus, take 19, just fucking roll her into shot, roll her into shot. Do you know what? We'll just have her getting out of the car.
Thank you for listening to this episode, which is called Guapas Titties. If you like this and others, please leave us a review. And don't forget to subscribe. Or if you're listening to us on Spotify, give us an old follow. It really helps keep the show going.
This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Mm-hmm.